Welcome to Breaking It Down with D'Anthony, with your host, Devin Anthony. Welcome to the latest edition of Breaking It Down with D'Anthony. Some crazy news going on in the soccer world, football world, whatever you want to call it. Some off-season stuff we're going to talk about today for basketball and football. But first segment of the show, we're going to go over the obvious, craziest probably transfer window I've seen in my life. Ronaldo and Messi both on the move, but we're going to break down that huge news pretty much overnight, Ronaldo moving to Man United. And we got a special guest on the show. I got my really good friend, Bronson. He's always been there for me. Really appreciate all he's done for me. But Bronson, just introduce yourself real quick.
Yo, what's up? What's up, podcasters, fellow podcasters, you know? It's Bronson. You feel me?
And Bronson's also a soccer player. He is a Man City fan, and that's where we're going to start talking about this. So, basically, the reports that came out said, you know, pretty much Ronaldo is looking to move out of Juventus. You know, a lot of unhappy Juventus fans saying, you know, they thought he was holding them back, which I think is very untrue. He was, I think, everything they needed for them to really rejuvenate as a club, get back to a top level, you know. The Ronaldo bandwagon, it's a real thing, you know. Juventus gained popularity as a club, you know, with Pogba leaving, and I thought he was, you know, at least for the last, you know, 3 years, he was huge for them. But I think it's unfair for you Juventus fans to say that he was holding them back. What do you think Ronaldo was, you know, necessarily holding them back, or do you think he was great for them those last couple of years?
Personally, I think he was great for them. I feel like he brought a lot to the team and brought a lot to the table and helped them extremely.
And I think people discredit how good of a leader he is, and I think that's something that he's definitely going to bring to United that they've frankly been lacking for the last couple of years, that they need to get them back on top. But basically, you know, reports coming out, I guess he got injured in training, they pulled him out, he's talking to his agent, and then there's surfaced the internet that he's looking at Man City, and Man United fans lose it. They say, you know, you can't do that, you know, once a red, always a red, you know, traitor, all those things. And then in comes United, City aren't able to make the contract happen. In comes United, they hijack the deal, and they're able to sign 36-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo. What a signing. And they got him for a fee of 15 million euros, which, you know, I get it. You're not going to, it's not going to be crazy expensive for as good of a player as, I mean, he is a great player, but he's 36 years old, only a 2-year contract with 8 million in add-ons as well in that deal. Obviously the wages are huge. I think that was something that City was looking at. You know, you just spent 100 million on Grealish. For City, you know, now that it's pretty much over for them, you miss out on Ronaldo. You know, a decent transfer window, you get Jack Grealish, but a lot of disappointments as well, you know, losing Harry Kane, losing Ronaldo. What did you think overall about City transfer window and if they really needed to do anything at all?
Honestly, I wasn't too happy. I would have preferred Ronaldo over Grealish. No hate to Grealish. However, Grealish is still a great player, and I feel like he's got a few more years than Ronaldo does, as good as Ronaldo is. But I'm not too happy that he went to Man United, to say the least.
And, you know, as Man City wins the league, obviously, last year, runners-up in Champions League, you can argue that, you know, they didn't really need a great transfer window. They have pretty much everyone coming back besides Aguero, who is towards the end of the career, way past his prime. So even bringing in someone like Grealish, who's still trying to get his feet under him in a huge club like City, you know, you could argue that City doesn't necessarily, obviously, you know, losing Aguero is huge, losing that leadership up top, but you have Gabriel Jesus who's ready to come in and score some goals for them. Obviously, Grealish contributing hugely offensively as well. So, you know, missing out on Kane, missing out on Ronaldo, you know, even speculation about Haaland, guys like that. You know, it's big, attractive signings, you know, what you call a quote-unquote sexy signing, but I don't know how necessary it is. You know, you're spending so much money on all these players. You know, Man City, you're one of the most expensive lineups in the world, so you can argue that, you know, even if they missed out on these players, they're still going to be a great team this year. You know, they won 5-0 against Arsenal today. I don't know if you've won if you watched that game or not, but when City are on it, they're so dominant. And, you know, as a City fan yourself, what do you kind of see the limit of City winning this year in terms of, can they win the league, can they win the Champions League, what do you see them doing this season?
Before all of the transfers happened from team to team, I had a big bet that Man City would be winning. However, after seeing the new teams, as dominant as Man City is, I don't know if we have a chance to win it this season.
anything? Like, not even FA Cup, Premier League, nothing?
I'd say if we did win something, it would be Premier League. However, I don't think we have a chance in Champions League.
So who do you got winning the Premier League?
Man City.
For the Premier League? Or Well, let's say they didn't. If you're an unbiased opinion, if it wasn't City, who would it be?
Chelsea.
Oh, we got to talk about that. Lukaku, what a signing that was from Inter Milan. Also kind of surprise signing. And you know, bowling goalie, you know, can't stop the shine. You got to love Lukaku. And what he's done during the offseason, the absolute strength that he's put on, you know, you can tell it's not fat, it's muscle. And he's going to be huge up top for them, as, you know, obviously very disappointing season from Werner last year. So to bring in a guy like Lukaku, I mean, huge deal, over $100 million, which, you know, is incredible. But it's exactly what Chelsea needed. I'm sure Lukaku's great for the challenge to come back to England. You know, he's tearing it up in Italy. But compared to England, Italy's, you know, Serie A is just not as good of a league. But I think this year there's no clear favorite for who's going to win the Premier League. You have, you know, four or five really good teams. Obviously not Arsenal. They are off to a very, very horrible start, 0-3. But honestly, I don't even know if I can pick favorites who's going to win the Premier League right now. I think, you know, City and Chelsea are obviously the favorites, but, you know, can United make a run now with Sancho, with Varane, you know, with Pogba staying, Fernandes staying, and obviously the man Ronaldo up top. So, you know, obviously you can count Spurs out, but, you know, between Liverpool, City, Chelsea, United, I think that's a four-way race that could be really exciting, especially towards the end of the season. So, obviously, we talked about the Ronaldo deal. That's huge, but I thought what even gained more attraction, what was going on through the news for weeks, was Messi going to PSG, which absolutely just stunned the soccer world. How Barcelona broke that to him, you know, it's like a really bad breakup. You know, imagine dating someone for 5 years and all of a sudden they're like, you know what, I'm just going to focus on myself out of nowhere. Like, it's brutal. Like, it's hard to put something like this into perspective. Like, if you want to put perspective, you can argue, let's say MJ had played with the Bulls for 10 years and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, we're going to have to get rid of you because we don't have enough money to pay you. Which, you know, brings in the financial fair play discussion, which we'll talk about another time. But it really, just as a soccer fan in general, as a fan of sports, it is really heartbreaking seeing Messi go from Barcelona. What was your initial reaction to him leaving? How did you feel about it?
At first, I didn't believe it at all. He's been there since he was 13. I couldn't see him in a different jersey. I just couldn't. And especially since he doesn't have that same number 10, I just feel like he's not going to be the same player as he was at Barcelona. I feel like he won't be as happy. You know what I mean? He's lived there since he was a kid. And PSG's, I mean, they're going to be a powerhouse this season. And it's just going to be amazing to watch them play, especially with Neymar and Messi back together. But, I mean, it happens, but I just don't know how I feel about it right now because Messi is still the amazing player he is, but I don't know if he'll perform the same way he will as he did at Barcelona.
Yeah, and there's a big difference between being a Messi fan and a Barcelona fan. We have a friend who's like that. And I think there's a lot more Messi fans in the world than there are Barcelona fans. And I think obviously he's going to succeed at PSG. You can argue that he's not even going to be the number one guy there, that it's probably going to be Neymar or Mbappe. And that obviously Messi will still be huge, have a great season, but he won't be in that primary leading role throughout the season like he was at Barcelona. So just as a soccer fan in general, it's like, okay, cool. Like, he's playing on one of the best teams in the world. Like, he's going to have a chance to win another Champions League. But it's just how everything happened, how it's going to happen this season, that it just doesn't sit right with me in general. Like, I'm not a Barcelona fan, but to just someone who's been that loyal to the club, who offered to take half of, you know, pay cut of half of his contract, it's crazy. Like, what else can you do? You know, and even for PSG, when you have someone coming in who technically doesn't even want to be there, I'm sure he'll love being in Paris, you know, playing with such great players, but it just doesn't sit right with me. You know, he's playing with one of his greatest rivals and Sergio Ramos, and now they're friends. Like, what's up with that? Like, I don't know. It's crazy. If you had to rate it 1 through 10, compare Ronaldo and Messi, in terms of which transfer is most impactful, which transfer just the craziest. What do you rate Messi 1 to 10?
I have to say about a 6 or a 7, honestly. It's crazy, but not as crazy as Ronaldo, because he's going to start his he started his career at Manchester United, and he's going to finish it there. And he's been I don't know, his transfers have been definitely interesting in the past few years, from Real Madrid, where he's been there forever, to Juventus, and he didn't stay at Juventus too long, and now he's back at Man United. So honestly, I'd say Ronaldo's about a 8 or 9 for me on a level of craziness, and Messi's about a 6 or 7.
And I agree with that, but initially I thought differently, because Ronaldo's was so sudden, where it's like it catches you a lot more off guard. But you say, okay, you know, they kind of been building up this deal for a while. Everyone's always speculated his return, his possible return to Man United. Now it's actually happened. Whereas Messi was like, you know, there was kind of speculation. There was last summer about him going to Man City, not necessarily PSG. But even though it happened over a long period of time, it's still something that just like makes your heart sing. It's like Ronaldo's like, okay, he doesn't really have that much of a connection to Juventus, and obviously he's going back home to Man United, but for Messi to leave a club that he's the only club he's ever played for, for him to all of a sudden leave, it's not his fault, which makes it even worse. You know, for Barcelona to essentially give up on him because they want to pay all these other players who are nowhere near as good as him, and pay them more money, which is absurd. But it really is. I wouldn't say frustrating. It's just disappointing as a fan in general. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that. If you think this is a good opportunity for Messi, or you think it's just something that's going to be awkward, that, you know, that if they win the Champions League, that will necessarily, you know, the significance isn't there because of how good of a team they are. It's essentially that they're building a super team. Like we've come to a place in the world of sports where teams only think they're going to be successful if you're building super teams. Like it wasn't like that, you know, 5-10 years ago. It just wasn't. It's a whole different dynamic now, not just in the soccer world, but you know, in basketball and football, where, you know, just all these teams, you know, whoever's got the most money, you're just trying to build super teams. And as you know, as a fan, I don't really love that. But I know others are like, okay, that's awesome. Put all the best players together. It's fun. It's fun watching them. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you like the super team dynamic, or do you kind of like the teams spread out, more competitive?
I feel like the super team dynamic will be amazing to watch. However, I feel like it's kind of like what they were going to do with like the Super League, and put the best teams, and there's just going to be the rest of them. You know what I mean? Like the rest of them are just going to be like kind of like left in the dust, and everybody will be looking at PSG and how they have so many amazing and world-class players that they're going to forget about the other teams with amazing players. And it's going to be harder to have the young players get to where they want to be and become the next Messi and Ronaldo.
Right, and that was why there was such big pushback against the idea of the Super League a couple months ago, and I'm really glad they didn't end up going through with that, because they had Arsenal in that field, and Arsenal's arguably not even a top 10 team in the Premier League right now. I think, you know, for academies to still grow, even that's becoming a bigger thing here in the U.S., you know, obviously it's really fun and entertaining to watch, but it's almost, you know, it kind of ruins the sport. It kind of takes away, you know, all the glory of a second, third tier team, you know, making a run in the FA Cup to, you know, to the quarterfinal or something like that. It's, you know, it hasn't happened in multiple decades, but it's still something, you know, that you latch onto, that, you know, you love the story of the underdog. And when you have these just sheer super teams, PSG, if you look at that starting 11, it's insane. You know, you even have the two of the best goalkeepers in the world, and you don't even know which one you're going to start. Donnarumma and Keylor Navas. You know, you got Ramos, you got Verratti. You know, the speculation of them signing Pogba next time should be even crazier. You know, you got a top three of Mbappe, Neymar, and Messi. Like, and Di Maria coming off the bench as well. Like, it's just not fair. Like, who can compete? Who in France can compete against that? It's like it kind of already decides who's going to win the league. Just because PSG has the most money. I don't really like that dynamic, but, you know, others will disagree with me. You know, they're like, oh, it's fun to watch, put all these best players together, it's ticket sales, yada, yada, yada. But then it also takes away from these smaller clubs. So
I agree with that, but if you think about it, what makes soccer so amazing is the unpredictability of games. You know what I mean? So yeah. If we have Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe on one team, you're going to think, oh, they're about to win. They're bound to win. There's no way they're going to lose. And then they lose to some underground team. That's what makes soccer like the amazing and beautiful sport that it is.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I forgot to mention that PSG didn't even win the league last year. I think it was Lille that ended up pulling out that trophy in the last day of the season there. Obviously, PSG are the favorites to win, but you know, to your point, you never know. And that's why you gotta love tournaments where, you know, where it almost favors the underdog, where you have March Madness for basketball, you know, where you have an 11 seed UCLA almost beating number one Gonzaga in the Final Four. It comes down to the last buzzer beater. You know, you have 16 seeds winning a couple years ago. You know, you gotta latch on. You gotta love that story of the underdog as a sports fan. And to your point, when something that like that happens to a super team, it's obviously very embarrassing and degrading to that super team because of how talented they are. But it's also awesome for that lower team that wins. And I think that's a great point. That's a great point you made, and that's something that fans can also look forward to. One last thing before I let you go. What do you think about the rumors about Mbappe going to Madrid? Do you think that's the right move for him at this point in his career? You know, I think he's 21, 22. Doesn't want to be in the shadow of Neymar and Messi. Obviously, if he goes to Madrid, he'll be the leading guy there. Even, you know, because Benzema's good, but not on the level Mbappe is. So what would you think about that possible deal going through?
I feel like it, coming from his angle and him having two of the best players in the world on his team, it's better for him to get on a team where he's the leader, because he can really show people what he can do. But when he's like in the shadow of Messi and Neymar, he can't show exactly what he can do and how amazing he really is as a player. And as he continues to grow, the more people will see that. I feel like they'll see it more on Real Madrid than PSG.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And kind of in perspective to listeners that necessarily don't follow soccer, it's almost kind of like the situation with Kyrie leaving LeBron, where you know, Kyrie wins a ring with LeBron, makes that huge shot to put them four in that game seven against the Warriors. They ended up winning the finals. But he obviously, you're not going to be the main guy with LeBron. And it's the same thing. You know, you can argue, okay, Neymar's number one, Messi's number one, but no one's going to say that Mbappe's number one. He's a great player. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, you know, arguably could be the most talented player on that team, but it doesn't have the sheer impact on a team like Neymar and Messi do. So I get why he wants out, why he wants to go to Madrid. Obviously, you don't want to go to a lesser team. I think Madrid's still a great team where he can take over and take leadership for in that point of the career. It's almost like it's honestly almost like what the Ronaldo situation was. There were still great players at Man United, you know, when he was coming out of that younger period of his career, and then he goes to Madrid and shines. And I think Mbappe sees that. Mbappe, you know, Ronaldo is someone that Mbappe idolizes, and you know, maybe he's modeling that as a potential future for his career. You know, I was comparing it to Kyrie. Obviously, there isn't as much. I don't think there's as much drama going on there. Obviously, since Kyrie has left Cleveland, he hasn't won. It's been kind of a mess. You know, he's a great chance of winning with the Nets this year, which we'll talk about more later when we talk about the offseason. But I think for Mbappe, I think that's a great move. I think that's a great move for him. Others will disagree. Obviously, if you're a PSG fan, you want Mbappe to stay, but how selfish can you be? Like, look at your team right now. You'll still have Neymar and Messi. Like, that's arguably one of the best duos in the world, if not the best duo. So I think for someone like Mbappe to get out of there, to go to a team like to Madrid where he can be a young leader and thrive there in Spain, and I think, which is a much stronger league than France's, I think that'd be huge for him. Well, that's all we got today for soccer wise. Stick around after for a little off-season talk, NFL, NBA. But it was a pleasure having you on the show, Bronson. Any last words for listeners?
Thank you for watching another episode of Getting Down and Dirty with Devin Anthony Hume.
There you go. Pleasure having you on, man. We hope to have you on again soon.
Thank you for having me, buddy.
All right, as I said, we would. We're gonna wrap the show today with a little off-season talk, NBA, NFL. So let's first break down the NBA. You know, the big news right now in the last couple of days is Rajon Rondo. He's being cleared from waivers, I believe, from Memphis, and it looks like he's going back to LA. And for a player of, you know, who, as smart as Rondo is, as great as he sees the game, it feels like, you know, the amount of times he's been passed around the league is it's not fair. Like it's almost disrespectful to the kind of talent that he is. And you know, since 2006, when he came into Boston, he's since then he's been with Boston, he's been with Dallas, Sacramento, Chicago, New Orleans, LA, with the Clippers as well, Atlanta. You know, so since he left Boston in 2014, he's been essentially on a different team every year, besides the Lakers when he was there in 2018 and 2019. So, you know, I think it's regardless. I think it's great that he's coming back to the Lakers. I think it's definitely veteran leadership that they needed. He was an instrumental piece to that championship run in the bubble, and something that I don't think he gets enough credit for, because without Rondo in the bubble, I think it might be a different story. He was exceptional, especially in that finals. He doesn't have the nickname Playoff Rondo now for anything, for nothing. And I think Lakers last year, it was kind of a difficult situation in terms of, you know, how he's going to get paid. He saw an opportunity in Atlanta where he can get paid, so obviously he's going to pursue that. But now he's at a point in his career where, you know, I don't think he's necessarily worth as much, but can still contribute to a lot to a team. So, you know, he's familiar with the Lakers coaching staff, obviously won championship with them not even a year ago. You know, Vogel loves him, the whole coaching staff. Jason Kidd's out of there now, and Jared Dudley joining him in Dallas, which is huge news. I think that's great for player development in Dallas, especially for Luka Doncic to be able to work with a guy like Jason Kidd, who has a somewhat similar play style to how he did back in his days. But just looking at this roster right now, it's hard to say, okay, the Lakers look really old. Are they going to tire out? Are they going to get injured? You know, the really only good young player on that team is Talen Horton-Tucker. And even he, I mean, he's explosive, but he's not, you wouldn't say he's not like De'Aaron Fox explosive. He's not like that quick. You know, great young player, but not something of that caliber like a De'Aaron Fox. So very, you know, very old Lakers team, very experienced. You know, you have a lot of veterans. You know, if this was a team put together in 2013, it'd be the greatest team, probably one of the greatest teams of all time. But it's a point in these guys' career. You know, Westbrook is, you know, heading out of his prime. Still a great player. You know, won MVP a couple years ago, but I think he's towards, you know, the back end of his prime. I think LeBron, as an NBA player in general, is always in his prime. How can he not be? But again, injuries have plagued him the last couple of years. He was lucky to not have to deal with that the Lakers championship run in the bubble, but something that he dealt with last year. You know, the Lakers barely make the playoffs and then are bounced first round because of injury issues with him and AD. AD is not even 30 yet, but he's struggled with injuries throughout his career. That's always been a problem. So for the Lakers, obviously you have great veteran experience in that team. You know, I think the most experienced team in the NBA right now by far. And bringing in Rondo puts an exclamation point on that. And, you know, obviously Westbrook is going to be the number one guy there. There's no doubt about that. But Rondo coming off the bench, getting solid minutes, I think, you know, he'll probably get like a little under 20 minutes a night. But that's still huge, you know, and especially if Westbrook isn't clicking, you bring in Rondo. It's great for spacing on the floor. And I think, you know, him and Gasol, the spacing will be insane because that's exactly what Gasol provided last year. I was missing with Rondo, and Rondo, you know, to be able to take that burden off LeBron and Westbrook for that point guard duties, for him to come in to be able to move the ball, facilitate the ball, find guys, find shooters like none, like Bazemore, find AD in the post. It's huge. As a Lakers fan myself, I'm very ecstatic. I'm very happy that Rondo's coming back, and I think that's exactly what that Lakers team needed to round off their team. I think it's very, very lucky that he fell into their hands the way that he did. You got to look at the Eastern Conference. Probably, you know, we thought it would be Lakers Nets last year. That's not how it folded. But now that we have a somewhat more normal season, I think that's, you know, it's a favorite again, Lakers Nets. You know, they pick up Patty Mills, who was great in the Olympics in Tokyo. You know, gives them more depth, something that they struggled with last year. They're able to figure out all the cap there, able to pay KD. So, you know, I think it could still be argued, but in my opinion, you know, a lot of other people's opinion, Kevin Durant is probably the best player, in the world right now. And I think he established that in the Olympics for sure. Just a guy, you know, who's been so great for so long. If he had never got injured, I think his legacy would be even greater. But because he missed that 1-2 year period with his Achilles or ACL, I can't remember, from the Warriors, he's gonna be discredited for that. But he's the way he's rebuilt himself, the way he's improved in the offseason each year. I think that's why he's established himself as, I'll probably say him and Giannis probably two best players in the league right now. The Bucks sat, PJ Tucker didn't end up moving on. That's tough for them. He moves on to Miami, who I think is a very, very solid team now, very, very deep. But losing PJ Tucker, I think that obviously hurts Milwaukee. They still have a great team. I mean, it's a championship team. You keep your core three. That's exactly what you need. And I think they'll be right back there for an Eastern Conference final, at least, if they don't make the finals again, which, could be a little bit harder coming up against the Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals rather than coming up against the Nets in the second round. It's a bit of a different story. You have teams like Charlotte, who are looking at their summer league squads, who are looking younger for depth. They brought in Kelly Oubre, big for them. You got to ask the question, are they going to take on LiAngelo Ball? I don't think they will, but I think it'll be great publicity for them if they do. Boston will still be great with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They're able to figure out a couple more pieces around them. Nothing too significant. So sorry, Boston fans. I don't see you guys making it past the second round next year. Trae Young coming back, Luka Doncic coming back for the Mavericks. I think it'll be, once again, very, very strong field that we'll see next year based on what happened in free agency. Not as much shakeup as we usually see, which is understandable. Big free agency class, but nothing too significant like we've seen in the years past. Speculation of Damian Lillard leaving. He's not leaving now. He's staying put in Portland. There's still time for there to be trades, but I think everything's pretty much settled out. And it looks like, in terms of teams who have the most depth, who have the most star power, it's the Lakers and the Nets. I may be wrong. I was totally wrong last year. We'll look back on this, come June next year. But I think that's what everyone would like to see. It's great TV. That's the game they've picked for Christmas Day, Lakers Nets. So we'll get a preview for that. We'll break that down after that happens. But I think LeBron's got this year and he's got next year left on his contract. Can you argue, okay, this is it? A lot of those guys on that the Lakers sign are on 1-year contracts. Obviously Westbrook will be huge in that signing trade. It kind of takes the burden off of LeBron for playmaking at least. But they have good shooters. Still, I don't think will be. I think they'll improve how they shot last year, but still not, a top 10 shooting team in the league, especially compared to the likes of a team like Golden State, who I think will be top 4, top 5 team in the West after not even making the playoffs last year because that boy Klay Thompson's coming back. Gotta love it. Happy to see him. I'm not a Warriors fan, but just as an NBA fan in general, you got to be happy to see him coming back. So, speaking of players coming back, Dak Prescott. I've been watching Hard Knocks. It's been great. Looks like he's going to be the starter week one after not playing any preseason games. But, again, not a Cowboys fan. Cowboys probably one of my least favorite teams. I get it's America's team, but if they're not your team, you're not a huge fan. But I love Dak. I think he's class. I think he's a great personality. Someone that a lot of the guys like to have around in the locker room. Great, great leadership from him. That's tough coming in week one, against the Buccaneers after really not having, a very good, I wouldn't say not a very good training camp. He's just been limited. He's had multiple injuries, nothing too major, but stuff that's, that they want to be safe. And that is sign like him. I believe it's something with his shoulder. He's still recovering from his ankle injury from last year. So he's definitely gonna throw himself in there week one. And I think he'll be ready to go. Maybe not 100%, maybe closer to 90-95%. But that's a tough week one game against the Buccaneers Thursday Night Football to open up the league this year. I think in terms of preseason, a lot of these guys choosing opting out to not play, probably decisions from their coaches. Not a very entertaining preseason, which I get it. It's preseasons for the teams to work out the kinks. To figure out how to form their team. Obviously the main excitement is surrounding the new quarterbacks. You have the possibility of Mac Jones beating out Cam Newton. Not sure who's going to start there yet week one. You have the possibility of Trey Lance beating out Garoppolo in San Francisco. Not sure who's going to start week one there either. It looks like Trevor Lawrence has emerged as the favorite to start for Jacksonville. Still not sure. We're still not sure about Chicago yet. Will Justin Fields have a role or not? I don't think he'll. I believe the Bears have even said that they're not gonna go with him as the starter for the first week. But we'll see from there. If it's not a first couple great weeks, throw Justin Fields in there. Try something new. Very different play style quarterback compared to compared to Andy Dalton, who I think the Bears are going with right now. I think it'll be a very exciting season. I think it's been a great offseason. A lot of great moves for a lot of these teams. You know, obviously, a headliner of this offseason was the Rams bringing in Matt Stafford. They're also able to recently trade for Sony Michel, so to give them more of a run game with Cam Akers going down with the season-ending injury. So you have two, pretty solid running backs for the Rams, with Henderson and Michel. I don't think they'll run the ball that much just because of how great of a passer Stafford is, and I think him and McVay will have a very good relationship, and I think the Rams can be very successful this year. You have Cook or you have Robert Woods staying in LA. You have Cooper Kupp staying. So good targets for Matt Stafford. Probably the best team he's ever been on, especially defensively. So I think there's huge upside for the Rams. I think there's huge upside for all four teams in the NFC West because, Arizona's right there making the playoff to make the playoffs last year. And then you have San Francisco, who missed out on the playoffs last year. That's just because their whole team was basically injured. But they come back healthy. I think they're also a strong favorite to make the playoffs this year with everyone back. So, they're not sure about their quarterback situation yet, but I think everything else is pretty much sorted out, which is not how it was last year. People forget that they made that Super Bowl run, a year and a half ago. So, you can't count them out yet. Obviously, AFC North is looking strong again, for the exception of Cincinnati. I don't see them winning more than 5-6 games this year. And that's being nice just because of, I don't think they have the offensive line they need still. That's what they should have been their main goal, is improving over the offseason. I don't think they did. Obviously Joe Burrow, I think, is going to be very motivated, very hungry, but if you don't have a good offensive line in front of you, how good can you actually be? And I think that's going to be the same situation for Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence has a little bit more of an advantage just because of how big he is and how mobile he is. I think in terms of just a passer in general, I think Joe Burrow is better. But in terms of overall game, I think Trevor Lawrence gives Jacksonville a better chance to probably win more games than Cincinnati does. Do either make the playoffs? No way. Two young quarterbacks, not very poor offensive lines for both, questionable defenses. Yeah, no way either of those teams make the playoffs. But I do see Cleveland, Baltimore, and Pittsburgh all coming out of the AFC North. So that should make for an exciting division in the AFC North. And even the AFC East. Zach Wilson's going to be the guy in New York. Do I see them winning more than 4 or 5 games? Maybe, probably not. Not a whole lot of upside there, but Miami will be strong. New England obviously is reloaded. And Buffalo is obviously the favorite of the AFC East, with their boys, Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. So I think in terms of the overall field in the NFL, I think this is one of the stronger fields we've seen in a while. Even the NFC has improved. NFC East has improved as bad as they were last year. I don't think we're going to see the same situation there, especially with a stronger Cowboys team, with a Philly team that's sorted out all their injuries and all their problems, with a Washington team who I think has great upside with a great young defense, one of the better defenses in the league, and then a great veteran quarterback like Fitzpatrick coming in to lead that team. So should make for a very exciting season. Great offseason, great preseason, so I'm looking forward to it. Well, that's all I got for you guys today. I really appreciate you guys tuning in, and I'll see you soon.